kind of morning that don't fade away. Like it, yeah, let it play, share it, yeah, pass it on your way. Servo, don't hesitate. David L. Gray in the morning, don't be late. It is David L. Gray in the morning. Glad to have you here. It is Friday, so we are live streaming everywhere. We got this live streams as usual, only on YouTube and Rumble. But it's Friday, so we are streaming also on the Facebook and also on X.com. So however you're listening, wherever you're listening, whenever you're listening, thanks for tuning in to David L. Gray in the morning. Got a great show for you today. Got Matthew Priest. He'll be on talking about his conversion story. He started off as a Protestant, then he became like a radical traditionalist Catholic, and then he converted in a sense, or found his way home to just being just a faithful Catholic husband, father. We're going to talk about his journey, so that's going to be interesting. But let's go ahead and get started with the saint of the day and the commentary on today's readings of Mass. And I was thinking about it, you know, I was working on what we're going to be talking about next week. I was working on the shows for next week, you know, working on the lineup. So we have another guest Friday. So I was thinking about what are we going to talk about like Monday and Wednesday? And then it occurred to me that I'm not going to make any new rad trad friends. I think it's over. I think my days of making rad trad friends are over. And because, you know, I've been talking a lot about, you know, Father Chad Ripperger and a whole demon gossip thing, right? So, you know, people are mad at me about that. Even though I'm completely right about that, bringing attention to the demon gossip, deliverance prayers over sacraments, misrepresenting what saints have been saying, misrepresenting what or contradicting the Immaculate Conception. All right, so, you know, they mad at me about that. They've been mad at me also about the whole SSPX thing, you know, how I went on the SSPX, talking about that. And I think they already been mad at me for like years. You know, they stopped inviting me on their podcast. They stopped coming on mine. But I was thinking, man, I'm not going to make any more friends because, look, you know, next week I won't have to talk about. So I went somehow I ended up listening to something Mother Miriam said. And I just thought it was crazy. It was like so crazy, like the mistakes she's making in this video about what the Catholic Church teaches. I was like, oh, they have to make this a teachable moment. I have to talk about this. And then soon as I upload the thumbnail to the video, even before the video is even played, people are going to say, oh, David, you're attacking an old nun. You're attacking a poor nun. I know that's going to come. So they're going to hate me about that. They're going to hate me for that. And then Wednesday, we're probably going to talk about, I saw somebody sent me some Grace Force. So Grace Force with Father Hyman and Doug Berry, they did a video. They had Dan Schneider on there, I think is his name. You know, he works with Father Ripperger, and he's on there, you know, talking about all their critics and how they're being attacked and how the attacks are coming from Satan. And, you know, he did a whole false appeal to authority thing where he's basically saying like, oh, we've been doing this. We're the experts. You guys are stupid. You can't criticize us because we're the experts. You know, you don't have the degrees we have, that type of thing, you know, false appeal to authority. So like, oh, I have to make a video about that. So, yeah, I just think my days of making rad trad friends are over. It's to the point where I think I have to call the rad trad friends who I thought or I think that I may still be friends with just to see if we're still friends. Right. You know, it's gotten to that point. And I was on, you know, a couple of them do still text me, you know, say jokes, right? But yeah, I don't know. Really only one. Just really only one. I was wondering about Gordon Pacheco over at Glad Trad. Like, I went on his channel the other day. We're buddies. We met before, you know, we hung out. You know, we used to talk quite often. And then I went to his channel and I was like, you know, and I posted a funny comment on his post, but he didn't respond back. It's like, man, are we still friends? Or should I text him? So yeah, I think it's a wrap. Me and my Rad Trad friends. I don't think I make any new ones. So yeah, that's that's my life. That's my life. So yeah, that's next week's lineup. We're gonna be talking about that, and then on Friday, I'll have another guest on, Joseph from Frontline. He'll be on. So we're going to just talk about that. So yeah, really, really excited for that. And yeah, that's all I know about that. Oh yeah, Father John Lovell. Father John Lovell. Yeah, he's Rad Trad, right? And yeah, we still text back and forth sometimes. Yeah, but yeah, I guess that's it. That's the only Rad Trad friend I have, just Father John Lovell. So anyway, let's get into the show. Let's get into today's Saint of the Day, being brought to you by St. Dominic's Media. You guys, hop over to St. Dominic's Media and join our mailing list. And while you're there, just check out some of the courses that we have to offer, our retreats, our online books, our podcasts. And I made it really easy for you as well, that if you just go over to stdominicsmedia.com like this and just scroll down just a little bit there, that is how you join our mailing list. And it's just once a week you'll receive our commentary on the readings for Mass on Sunday. And that's it. We don't spam you or anything like that. So just join our mailing list. We appreciate it. But while you're there, check out what else we have to offer. So today's Saint of the Day is being brought to you by St. Dominic's Media, your source for Catholic liturgy and history. So our Saint of the Day is St. Kateri Takawitha. She lived from 1656 to 1680. She was born in a Mohawk village of Ulster, Ninon. Today is Auristville, New York. Kateri Takawitha grew up in a world marked by suffering, survival, and quiet heroism. A smallpox epidemic scarred her face and weakened her eyesight, but it also planted in her a profound gentleness and heart ready for God. At 20, she was baptized Catherine, rendering Kateri a Mohawk. And from that moment, she lived with a single desire to belong entirely to Christ. Ridiculed for her piety and mocked for, living a faith, and pressured to abandon her faith and misunderstood by her own people, she fled to the Christian mission at Kalanawaga in Canada, where her life became a witness of purity, prayer, and sacrificial love. Known as the Little Mohawk, Kateri embraced a life of virginity, simplicity, and deep devotion to the Eucharist. Her days were marked by quiet service, her nights long hours of prayer. She carried the wounds of her past bitterness and offered her suffering for the conversion of people. She was canonized on October 21st, 2012 by Pope Benedict XVI, and she is now honored as the patron saint of Native Americans, ecologists, environmentalists, orphans, and all those who are ridiculed for their piety. So if you have someone making fun of you because, you know, at Mass you hold your hands like this, or they make fun of you because all you have to talk about is Christ Jesus, and or they make fun of you, people in your family make fun of you because you go to Mass every day or something like that, appeal to Saint Kateri and ask her to pray for you as you suffer. In her sacred art, she is often shown holding a lily, as you see in the image that we generated, holding a lily, a rosary, and a turtle, symbols of her purity, devotion, and her Mohawk heritage. Saint Kateri Takawitha, Lily of the Mohawk, pray for us. All right, I'll be right back with a commentary on today's readings at Mass. This is David O. Gray in the morning. Hey, before we get into today's commentary for readings at Mass, I want to remind you about my book, The Liturgical Sense for the Readings at Mass. This is your A, but we have them for years B and for year C. If you want to learn how to live the liturgical life, that is how to live the Mass in the world, in your daily life, this is your book. Also, it unpacks scriptures in very insightful and very Catholic ways. But what I really want you to do is to make sure you go over to stdominicsmedia.com and sign up for our mailing list. Because what if you don't like to read? What if you don't like words on paper? What if you don't have time? Well, I have something for you as well. If you join a mailing list, you'll get the audio version of this book for every reading at Mass for that particular Sunday in your email box for free. So sign up for our mailing list. Again, that's at stdominicsmedia.com. Let's go ahead and get into the commentary for today's readings of Mass. Thank you. Yeah, today's readings for Mass for the Friday in the second week of Easter. The first reading comes from Acts 5:34-42, and then responsorial psalm is Psalm 27, saying, "One thing I seek, to dwell in the house of the Lord." And then the Gospel reading is from John chapter 1, verses 1 through 15. And it's John's narrative on the multiplication of loaves and fishes. But I want to give a commentary on today's readings at Mass for the first reading. And it concerns the Rabbi Gamaliel, which is different to hear a positive take on the rabbi here. Usually we hear not anything positive to say about the Jews in any of the Gospels, in the book of Acts, or any of the epistles or letters of Paul or any of the apostles. But I was looking at Gamaliel this morning. I was like, wow, this is an interesting person. This is something we can probably take something from. There's some things here we can reflect on in our own lives. So we've been following Acts since we've come out of Easter, the book of Acts written by Luke. And so far in Acts, the religious establishment looks like the villain. They're definitely, if you're looking for a bad guy, if you're looking for, you know, this is what we do. We try to see who's the problem. That's what we want to know. Who's the problem here? We do that all day in our own lives. And when we watch movies and we read books, like, who's the problem? Who's a troublemaker? Who's a bad guy? Who's a villain? And definitely, if you're reading the book of Acts, just as basic literature, you come away with the religious establishment of the Jews are the bad guy. They're the villain. And even Peter keeps reminding them that, hey, you guys killed God. You killed the Messiah. You killed the Holy One. You killed the one who God sent here just for you. And so in the response of the religious establishment is that they're arresting apostles. They're trying to silence preaching and doubling down on just fear and control. So it's chaos, it's emotion, and it's just pure reaction. But then in today's readings, out of nowhere, this Rabbi Gamaliel, when they're in the Sanhedrin here, he comes out of nowhere and he just stands up. And he's really the first calm voice in the room that we notice in the Gospels. He's really just the first adult in the room. He's a first man in authority who's not driven by rage. He's not driven by anger. He's not driven by insecurity. Like, these new Christians are not a problem for him, right? And he's the first Pharisee who actually wants peace. So he's very interesting. He's someone to look at here. And so he doesn't react, if you notice. You know, he doesn't react here out of any emotion. He responds really just out of principle. He's pragmatic and he's practical and he's tactical in a sense. He's like a tactical pragmatist, if that's even the thing. So he knows the law of sowing and reaping. And this is something we all should always have in the front of our mind in all of our daily interactions. Just the math of the situation. What you reap is what you sow. Gamaliel knows this. And he says, if it's not human, basically, he says, if it's not of God, then let them do whatever they were doing. He says, some time ago, some Theotis appeared claiming to be someone important. And about 400 men joined him, but he was killed. And all those who were loyal to him were disbanded and it came to nothing. After him came Judas, the Galilean. At the time of the census, he also drew people after him, but he too perished, and all who were loyal to him were scattered. So now I tell you, have nothing to do with these men and let them go. For if their endeavor or this activity is of human origin, it will destroy itself. But if it comes from God, you will not be able to destroy them. You may even find yourself fighting against God. This is his argument. It's tactical and it's pragmatic. And it's the basic math of reaping what you sow. So, and he's saying that if it's of human origin, it burns out. And that's what happens in our lives every day. But if it's of divine origin, it endures, such as the Catholic Church has endured somehow, some way for 2,000 years. It's been a bunch of messy behavior in the Catholic Church. There's been some messy people doing messy things and bad things. Yet somehow, despite of all the messiness inside the church and all the messy people, despite the fact that for 2,000 years, every government, religions, empire, states, even up until the day, have been doing everything they can to destroy the Catholic Church, poisoning popes, kidnapping popes, just everything they're saying, filling up our seminaries, some would say, with homosexuals, right? Despite all this, the Catholic Church is still here, stronger than ever. Because if it's of divine origin, as Gamaliel teaches, it endures. And so what happens next? After this, well, the apostles walk out of the Sanhedrin, you know, they're flogged, and then they rejoice, right? And that's the difference between people who live by conviction and people who live by convenience. And I would sum up like today's reading, first reading like this, and discipleship weighs ounces. Just ounces, if you put it on a scale. That's all discipleship weighs. But regret weighs tons, doesn't it? Regret just sits on you. But discipleship doesn't cost anything when it's in service to God. Even if you end up being a martyr and losing your life, what did you really lose? Nothing, because now you're eternally in heaven, right? It costs you nothing but the good. So out of this, I like to offer just a five-step action plan. Like, what can we do with this reading today? From a liturgical perspective, from the point of we're dismissed into the world to go be disciples, to share the good news, to be in the world who the liturgy has made us to be. Like, what do we do with this reading? I would say, number one, we all ought to be Gamaliel in a room. We should all be Gamaliel. And I would say, so when your emotions, if they spike today, don't match the chaos. Slow the moment down, lead with principle, not impulse or emotion. Be a tactical pragmatist. Number two, I would say test the source. So today, ask of every decision you want to make, is this of God or is it of me? Test the source. Because if it's of divine, you should commit to it. But if it's ego corrected, and that's something that I do every time before I come on the show. And even when I make it in my monologues, you know, the days preceding, I always tell God, I have to check myself because I'm like, okay, is this me trying to prove that I'm right? Is this me trying to prove David or is this me trying to prove God? And am I making this about me or am I making this about God? And that's just a basic thing we have to apply, even in our relationships with our spouses, right? Sometimes we just want to be right, you know, or our spouse wants to be right. And, you know, so we have to calm down and be the adult in a room. And part of being adults in a room is putting ourselves out the way, being humble and say, okay, what is this really about? Is this about the truth, or is this about me trying to win an argument? So is it divine or is it me? Right? If it's divine, commit. If it's ego, correct. Number three, we have to choose the ounces. We have to choose discipleship because it doesn't cost anything. And so we have to pick one discipline. I would say pick one discipline. And I got this from Jim Rohn. I listened to this motivational speaker sometimes. I think he's dead now, Jim Rohn. And I got this point from him. He talks a lot about just being disciplined. Right? Focus on that thing and get that thing done. And if there's any distractions, just ignore them. So I think so. He would say in this instance of like the ounces, he would say just pick one discipline you've been avoiding. Whatever it is in the spiritual life. I'm going to apply that to spiritual life now, not business. What discipline have you been avoiding? Has it been prayer? Has it been study? Has it been reconciliation? Has it been a hard conversation? Whatever discipline you've been avoiding, do it today. Because these small disciplines, they prevent heavy regrets. So whatever you've been avoiding, get it done so that you don't regret it. Because discipleship and discipline, I suppose, we can say discipline, it doesn't cost anything. Well, it costs ounces, but regrets weigh on us for the rest of our lives. Number four, I would say reframe the plan. So when something
doesn't set well with you, and that happens, what we have to say is that this is forming me, not defeating me. So when a suffering comes today, and it's going to come perhaps, something's not going to go your way. That's my definition of suffering. When things don't go your way, something may happen like that. It may be driving. Somebody may cut you off. It may be a conversation. It may be finances. Something probably is not going to go your way today. But don't let it, and even if it stings, don't let it just sit there, right? Just simply say, this is forming me, not defeating me. And that's when we live like the apostles did in today's readings. Yeah, they got a few flogs, but they ended up rejoicing because they said, this is forming me, it's not defeating me. That's the apostolic joy. And the last thing we could take from this reading from the apostles and Gamaliel today, we could say, the apostles stayed on mission, so we should stay on mission. And this is what the liturgy of the mass does when it dismisses us, is et ta missa est, go, you're dismissed, right? To go be in the world who we have become in the liturgy. So we have to live that liturgical thing out in our daily lives. So we have to stay on mission. The apostles didn't stop teaching. So in the same way, we have to choose one mission. One aligned mission, one aligned action today, and pick it and don't skip it. Like no matter what, just find whatever mission aligned action you have today, whatever you feel like God is calling you to do within that context of being a husband, a wife, a parent, an employee, a disciple, if you have a vocation, a particular vocation, find something in there that's aligned to your mission, that you know that you have to do, and just do it no matter what. So that's what I'll say. Those are the takeaways from today's readings. And this has been David L. Gray in the Morning. I'll be right back with our guest, William Matthew Priest. Let's talk about his journey into the Catholic Church. I'll be right back.
Hey there. I am David L. Gray. I am a Catholic theologian getting my doctoral degree in liturgical catechesis from the Catholic University of America. And this is my morning show. Welcome in. We do this every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Start off with Joy in the Morning, where I give you the saint of the day and an enlightening commentary on the readings of Mass. And then we get into something interesting. I'm looking at something in faith or culture from a lens of a Catholic who believes in faith, reason, logic, and the teachings of the church. There's no deviation from the magisterium here. Why people like this channel, why people sub, why people keep coming back is because I look at things from a very critical lens. This is no emotions applied, no groupthink, no talking points to the day, none of that. Nothing can't be. I'm not saying what I'm supposed to say. I'm saying what's true. Sometimes we get in those boxes, and I think that's very dangerous when we get comfortable and we just go along with what people think and what we're supposed to believe. No, you know, if it's not dogmatic truth, then we ask the questions, why? And so that's what we're doing here. And I hope that you like it. Yeah, I may get emotional myself. I may call something stupid or retarded. I may crack some jokes. But that's, again, that's why people like this channel. That's why they sub. That's why they share. That's why they like. That's why they join a community. And I hope that you do too. Let's get back to the show. Welcome back in to the David L. Gray Show. And thanks everybody for tuning in. We got Rihanna here. We got Daniel. We got people. So we're streaming on Facebook today. So we got people coming in from Facebook. We got Daniel here to know that we do a commentary on the readings of Mass. Yes, we do. Thanks for coming in, Daniel. Thanks for going to Sunday daily Mass. Yeah, that is quite a blessing. And we got Dan here. We got the Twitter people coming in real. We got, I have been a rad trad for Massetti, so I get it. So yeah, thanks everybody for tuning in from the different platforms. We appreciate you. Keep coming back. And let's bring in our guest today. We got William Matthew. Hey. Welcome in. Doing well, man. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty excited to be on. Been watching you a while.
Yeah, man. It's glad to have you. Glad to have you here out of the comm box. And
yeah.
So I guess we've known each other by the way of Substack. I guess you knew me before I knew you because I don't check my inbox as much. But let me introduce you to the audience. So William Matthew Priest, he's a devout Catholic husband and father. He's a convert. Yeah. Now, like I said, I've met him over, I think I first saw him over at Substack. He goes by the name over there, Willie Rambles, because he said he likes to ramble. But he writes about faith, family, and the strange poetry of just everyday life. His essays, they wander through like various things, you know, small town memories, modern absurdities, and just the quiet places where grace still shows up. He has the wit, he has the honesty, and he explores how belief, doubt, and just, I mean, he's talking about a lot of things too, whether it's like the Novus Ordo, his journey there, you know, the traditionalism, a little bit of politics. So a lot of stuff, really just the decency, basic messages, decency survives in a noisy age. So check him out there. I'm about to post his Substack in the comments here.
Thank you.
So check it out and hit that sub button. And but yeah, welcome in, man.
Uh-oh. No. Had a glitch there. Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
So I want to, let's just start off, like, how did you become a Protestant, first of all? Was that just something you were born into?
Yeah, I was born into it, yeah. I guess to start properly, I was actually baptized Catholic as an infant because my mom was a fallen away Catholic with my dad. And what happened was I was involved in a pretty bad car accident when I was like just short of a month old. I was September 79. So Yeah, I had a fractured skull. I like partially severed my tongue a bit through. Yeah, so I didn't think I was going to live. So they, some chaplain baptized me Catholic in, at Children's Hospital in Columbus, and never really received any other sacraments besides the baptism. And, you know, my parents early on, I think it was like 9 or 10 when they split, and my dad was a hardcore Protestant Baptist. His father was a traveling Baptist minister. And so he took seriously the once saved, always saved creed. So he followed it to its logical conclusion. So according to him, you know, once you accept Jesus one time, you just believe any one time, once saved, always saved. It doesn't matter what you do from here. And so we didn't go to church at all. Heck, we just thought, well, just believe in Jesus. We're good. We can do whatever the heck we want, you know. So, including he dabbled in the occult. You know, so did I. You know, Ouija boards, stuff like this. So, I mean, we did not lead a life that really paid God any mind, you know.
Yeah. It wasn't. So this is so I mean, this is when you're talking about when you're like not. I mean, you know, I guess a quasi Protestant family. Are you like even going to Easter and Christmas? Or are you even like going to church on like high holy days or anything like that? Nothing.
Nothing. Nothing. I think like a wedding here and there, every now and then.
What about some of those like youth groups or anything like that? Are you going to any of those or anything?
No, not until later. Not until later. When I was a teenager, you know, I was into like I said, the occult. I was into scary movies and stuff, you know, The Exorcist, all this stuff. And my dad was telling us, you know, like there's a, this stuff's real, you know, it's in the Gospel of St. Mark, you know, Jesus casts out these devils from the demoniac of what, Gadarenes, right? And, you know, I started reading St. Mark, just that chapter. The rest of it bored me. And then I got my hands on, he told me in the movie Jesus of Nazareth, that scene's in the movie. So I found a copy of the movie, wore that thing out, and I started to fall in love with Jesus, actually, by watching Jesus of Nazareth. Wasn't going to church, still held to this erroneous belief that once saved, I could do whatever I want. Jesus died for us. We didn't have to follow any rules. And it wasn't until I was about 18, 19. I was working at Target, Esther, Ohio. And I met this girl, kind of had a crush on her, right? She was a Christian going to this church in Logan. She invites me there. Girl looked like, she dressed like Cyndi Lauper. I don't know what the heck I was even thinking. But so I follow her to this church in Logan, Ohio, about 25 minutes from where I lived. And that's when I started to read scripture and started to take it seriously, trying to live the Christian life, still holding to this belief that, you know, once saved, always saved. At the end of the day, Jesus paid this price. There's really no need to strive too hard to be good. You know, and I was discovering different preachers online, like Dr. Gene Scott. I don't know if you've heard of this guy. He knew a lot of the biblical languages, and he reinforced some of these erroneous beliefs I had, that you didn't really have to be good at all. You didn't have to follow the law. Jesus came and took care of that for you. And he pointed me to people like Martin Luther, who said the same thing. He told Philip Melanchthon, you know, when you sin, sin boldly so that grace may abound.
I mean, so would you like define yourself within any like particular set? Because I'm hearing like some of what you're saying sounds like Reformed Calvinism, but other times it's kind of like, I mean, you're kind of like you got a mix of a lot of things in here. How would you have defined yourself in any particular set?
Non-denominational, you know, it's all over the place.
So it is like a blend of different things.
So I was kind of going to church all over the place, really. And I did that for years, you know, not living a very good life. And one day, this is probably about 06, I was at the Fairfield County Library in Lancaster. And at the time, I was really into C.S. Lewis. I thought he was brilliant. All of his essays, his books, I devoured them. So I'm looking at the library, looking for C.S. Lewis documentaries on DVD. And I stumbled upon this documentary by Carl Olson called The Da Vinci Hoax. It debunked that Da Vinci Code movie. And I'm watching it, and there's this guy, Carl Olson, and Father Mitch Pacwa, you know, this Jesuit priest, and they know so much about church history, talking about these saints I've never heard of. I'm like, how are these guys so informed, but yet they're Catholic? Don't they know that Catholics worship Mary, the idols, you know?
What did you know about Catholicism up to this point? Just that it was not right. Christianity?
Yeah. My dad told me that they were worshiping idols. You know, they had statues. Yeah, look, they're kneeling and praying before statues. They're saying these Hail Marys. He told me one time he was at a funeral and they were praying a rosary, and he was about to laugh because he didn't understand why they kept saying Hail Marys over and over again. And they did like all 15 decades, you know, so he was totally confused at what was going on here, but he was ready to laugh. He's like, and, you know, God told us not to engage in repetition, but it's vain repetition, but, you know, details. But I'm thinking Catholics are all like, they're the, like, I thought the Pope was a false prophet. I was reading Left Behind. You know, the church is the whore of Babylon, all this.
I didn't know that about the Left Behind series. Left Behind series touches on the Pope?
Oh, heck yeah. Yeah, they do. Really? They try to act like, oh, no, it's not anti-Catholic. There's just some bad Catholics in the church. No, you're condemning all of this. Because like, even in the book, it's like, well, there were certain followers that didn't really believe in Catholicism, and they were raptured, and that's why they're gone. Like, no.
Oh, okay. All right. Thanks for telling me that. Okay.
So, yeah.
Right, so you're reading. So you're coming across Mitch Pacwa and these guys, and you're like, they're not saved.
Right. Like, how do they know so much? Why are they smart guys? Why are they still Catholic? What are they doing? And so, I look into Carl Olson. I looked him up online and found out he's a former Protestant. Oh, what? So I emailed him. I was like, what the hell are you doing, man? Don't you know? And so he fired back. He was very gracious, answered all my emails. And I was bringing
But you were trying to save him.
Yes, kind of. I was also curious, like, what am I missing here? I'm asking, like, you know, how come, Jesus said, call no man father, idiotic inquiries like that. And he, of course, he probably thinking, look, I'm nuts. You know, Jesus didn't say call no, you can call your dad father. You know, he explained to me what Jesus meant. You know, I brought up Mary and the idol worship, and he did a good job of setting me straight and leading me to the right books, like Cardinal Newman, you know, Development of Christian Doctrine. Scott Hahn, all these.
That's really cool because you reached out to him, and first of all, he emails you back. I mean, that's something that I should remember, because sometimes I get strange emails, and sometimes Matthew, they're like William, they're so off, they're like so over here. I'm like, where do I even begin? And so where I begin is, you know, sending it to the trash can. That's usually, but you actually emailed him and he emails you back, and which is, I mean, that says something about him, but then it says something about you as well, is that you were receptive to what he had to say, or did you go back and forth for a while? Did you argue for a while?
We argued for a little bit. It didn't take much though, because I learned that I was terribly, terribly mistaken about the Catholic Church. I was way off on some of my assumptions, many of my assumptions.
Okay.
And it was, that was 07, early 07, I reached out to him. And man, I must have read like 30 something books and articles and watched all these videos of Carl Keating just obliterating guys in these debates on YouTube, you know.
And yeah, Keating's good.
Keating, yeah, he's really cool. So at the time I'd moved to Columbus. I'm working at Ohio Health, so I'm living close to St. Timothy's. I don't know if you know where that is in Columbus, because I know you used to live there.
Yeah, what part of it was? I mean, that's in Columbus City.
Riverside Methodist Hospital is.
Okay.
I was living right there, Thomas Lane, so I could just walk to St. Timothy. I started going to mass there, checking it, you know, and I was starting to pray the rosary, and I would walk to mass. I'm praying the rosary, and after each Hail Mary, I'm saying, God, please forgive me. Don't let me believe a lie and be damned. You know, I would say it after each Hail Mary, driving myself crazy. But, you know, so I
started. Okay, what about what year is this?
07. It was March,
okay,
April.
All right.
I'm just and then I'm telling my brother about all this, and he's pushing back on me with some of the same arguments I had, and I'm setting him straight, you know, and before I know it, he's going too, and he's living in Lancaster. He started going to St. Mary's in Lancaster, I'm like, okay, I want to be Catholic, right? And I'm looking up how to do this, and I see you have to go through RCIA. Daggone, I gotta wait for another year to be. I didn't know. No one told me.
Oh, yeah, because it's already around Easter time. And so they've already had the draft. And so now you have to
wait a year. Like, come on, man. I have to take a college course over here.
Right. Why can't I just walk into the altar and say the sinner's prayer or something like that? Why is there. How did you feel about that? How did you feel like that there was a process? Because when I became Catholic, it was, you know, I just went up to a priest and said, hey, you know, and he said, it was like became a 101 instruction because of the situation I was in. But how did that sit well with you? Because you want to be Catholic. It seems to be in your heart, but you have to wait.
Yeah. At the time I was thinking, what is this? You know, where I'm from, you just walk in and say, hey, I'm saved. You know, and then now you're part of the church. And so, yeah, at first it didn't sit well with me, but then I started to I looked up where RCIA came from, the whole concept, and it was based off of what the early church used to do. I think they used to make the catechumens wait, 3 years or something like that? So I was like, well, it's better than 3 years. But here's a funny thing. I was going to confession, though, because I'm technically baptized Catholic.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Along, so that was kind of
but
so then I dragged my little sister with me to RCIA, so she came in with me, and
Are you married at the time?
No, so I didn't meet her until about 6 years later. Well into the trad camp by then.
Let's get there. Is your brother, what about your brother?
He went through RCIA the same year I did, which was 07-08. In Lancaster. And we met this priest, Father Donald Franks in Lancaster. He was just the nicest person I've ever met. The only person I've ever met who was as nice as this lady I've worked with named Kathy. Other than that, this guy had to have been the nicest person. You ever seen the movie Enchanted? It's like Giselle became a priest, but only brilliant. Everything's just so positive, never angry, you know.
Oh yeah, I've met priests like this. Okay. Yeah.
Never angry, always happy as this could be to see you, no matter how annoying you are. And just he was the same. And he was very helpful to me and my brother. And he was trying to bring in vocations, and so he was telling us we should consider a vocation, which I did. But,
Oh, you did? Did you? How were you able to find your baptism certificate? Was that easy to get?
No, not too hard. It was I just called Children's Hospital. They mailed it to me within like 2 3
days. Oh. Okay. I mean your baptismal certificate, rather. Your baptismal certificate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was
Oh, they had that? Okay.
Yeah, they had that, yeah. They still have that. I've gotten other copies since then. So
I didn't even know. So hospitals have baptismal certificates?
Yeah, yeah. I thought I was gonna have to do the conditional baptism thing.
Yeah.
Which I did once I was a trad. I'll explain that.
But yeah, yeah. All right. So you come into the church, I guess, in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it sounds like you had a healthy RCIA process. No heresies or anything like that along the way. Nothing strange.
No.
Okay. And you didn't struggle with, did you struggle with the Holy Eucharist? Or because you don't struggle with Mary, you're already praying a rosary. Was there any like any theological issues?
I got a brown scapular by then. Yeah. No. So the Holy Eucharist was the only issue I had is why can't I receive now?
My
niece, who's Catholic and just received her first communion, she doesn't know a fraction of what I know. Envy is all I had.
Yeah, that's suffering. I tell you what, that's suffering when you're going through the process and you're still going to Mass. Because I know some people go through OCIA, RCIA, don't go to Mass for some reason. But if you're still going to Mass and you're seeing people go up and commune with Jesus Christ and you can't, that's holy suffering. And it's tough.
Yeah, it's brutal. It's like over a year I went through that. And God had mercy on me because the year we were received into the church, it was March 22nd. I'll never forget. It was Easter Vigil, March 22nd. So it's like, thank goodness. That was about as early as Easter could possibly be. So God did have mercy on me there. I was appreciative of that.
How good it came early. All right. So you're out of RCIA now, and so what's going on? Because I know you're still discerning the priesthood and all this stuff. So what else is going on after you get confirmed?
Cool story. So I'm confirmed, received the first communion March 22nd. Excuse me. Next day, March 23rd, Easter Sunday, I discover that Holy Family downtown, the terrifying part of Columbus you can possibly go to, has a Latin Mass at 9 a.m.
Yeah.
Before all those people come out.
Yeah. That's the one on the west side, right?
West Broad and Grove.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough. That's a tough neighborhood.
Dang. I love me some Latin Mass. Brave those waters. My gosh. But yeah. I didn't take much convincing, but I had my brother come with me to the 9 a.m. Mass, Holy Family, the very next day. We showed up early, like 8:15. We were nervous. We met a couple of older fellas, like, are you new here? You know, we explained to them we just were received into the church. And they brought us up front. No idea what was going on. I had just... The day before, I watched a Latin Mass on YouTube. And you could still watch it.
Okay.
The one Fulton Sheen narrates, he kind of explains what what's going on. So I had some kind of idea, but it's like, Father's got his back to us. He doesn't love us. Why can't I see? You know, now I learned later, like, no, he's facing God just like the rest of us. He's, you know, he's not on in a performance or whatever. But, so yeah, we go to Latin Mass, and that became my regular vigil Mass on Saturdays, Latin Mass on Sunday. And I discovered later they had Latin Mass during the week. Yeah, I worked till 4:30, so I get off in time to go to the evening Latin Mass. And before I
went
there, I'm exclusively going to the Latin Mass, and I started to serve. I'm older by now, 28, 29.
Yeah,
I'm serving with a bunch of kids who are yelling at me because I'm not getting the rubrics right. They were brutal, man. I'm looking at him, like flinching, like, but you know I could take you out right here.
Right. Where's your dad at so I can beat him up? But where's the but what's your attraction to the traditional at mass? You didn't explain it.
I was hooked from the vidi aquam to the reading of the last gospel. It was just, I still love it, man. I still, it's like, not that the Novus Ordo is bad. It's just that it's otherworldly. The chant, the smell, the bell, the language, everything was beautiful.
It's just transcendent. Transcendent, huh?
Yes,
just,
there you go. Other. Thank you. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. And I never experienced anything like it. And I got to admit, you know, to back up in my Protestant years, I knew about these groups of people who were resisting this church, this tyrannical church, and they're, you know, not going along with this BS that was implemented after Vatican II. And these guys were real rebels, you know, and I kind of liked that as a Protestant. And then even when I converted, I'm like, these guys are so cool. I got to be part of this. So and Ken Smith once said, you can take the Protestant, or you can take Matt out of the Protestantism, but you can't take Protestantism out of Matt. So I, whatever, man. At the time, like, I but so that was part of it, you know, because I was reading works by priests like Father Malachy Martin, you know, guys like Bishop McKenna, you know. Lorraine Warren, these guys are cool. They're doing these exorcisms and casting out demons and ghosts from people's homes, whatever. It was intriguing. Let's say that.
I don't know why it is, and that maybe it's because of maybe those experiences and things we've seen when we were younger, even before we become, you know, fully Catholic. But even if I go to a traditional Latin mass now, even here in Germany, we have one on the first Sunday, you know, a little about 20 miles away from here. Or even if I go to a Byzantine rite, is there something about the ancient rites? I don't know if you agree, but they just, they feel Catholic, right? And so in the same way, I would say the Novus Ordo, the ordinary form, it feels Catholic, right? But it's degrees. It's just when I walk into a traditional liturgy, I just feel like, oh, this is, you think it's because, what do you think that, what do you think that comes from?
It's, well, the language for one, the music, and sense. I mean, the Novus Ordo, I love it. You know, don't get me wrong. But it's too much like being at home. You know, you're hearing your comments.
Oh.
You know what I mean? It can be done well. It can be done well. For instance, the Mercedarians took over at Holy Family, and they celebrate the Novus Ordo, Ad Orientem, incense, everything, you know, the Latin is still preserved, you know, so.
Yeah.
And, you know, even the run-of-the-mill Novus Ordo can look great. Yeah, you've been to St. Patrick's in Columbus.
Yeah, even when I was in Columbus, my parish was St. Matthew the Apostle in Gahanna.
That's mine now.
What's the priest name there again?
Well, it's Father Sill now.
He's there. And so Gahanna, I thought, had the most reverence as far as a mega parish, as far as like a big parish. It had probably the most reverent Novus Ordo, I thought, in the Columbus area. And I think it's because I thought they did a good job of minimizing the things they brought in from the world. Right. Yes. And so you still felt like it was, you know, you had left the world. Now, every now and then, on Sunday, you still see the guy wearing a Bengals jersey. You see the guy wearing a Browns jersey, a Buckeyes jersey. You know, you still see that. Right. Mm-hmm. But you still feel like you've stepped across the threshold. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I was actually going to mention St. Matthew, the Apostle Church. Father Sill is still there. He's about to retire at the end of this year.
Okay.
They're replacing him with this Father Walter. He's from India and he's as reverent. He'll keep it going. I don't know. You were probably there when Father Schmidt was the associate pastor and he would offer a Latin mass every Monday morning.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I knew Father Schmidt because I used to serve mass with him at Holy Family when he was just a seminarian.
And oh, wow.
3-4 years away from being ordained. So he made a lot of that reverence. He brought a lot of that reverence with him. So
I remember his first, he used to offer daily mass at St. Matthew Apostle. No, he would do the daily and sometimes he would do the Latin. But I remember there was one Sunday there. This is the first time I ever heard someone sing the gospel. He sung the gospel. And I was like, that's amazing. And so, I thank him for that, for giving me that experience. And so, let's get back to your story. So you're going to the traditional Latin mass, you know, a daily communicant, daily worshiper, and on Sundays and the Saturday vigil as well. How do you get drawn into what people will call just radical traditionalism? What was that trajectory like?
That doggone Michael Davies. I was at Generations, Generations bookstore is Grandview. Catholic gift shop bookstore, and I got a lot of books there. And they had some traditional books because they had a friend of mine named Zach who used to work there, and he would make sure they stocked some. So you had like how to serve Latin Mass, basically it showed you the rubrics, all this stuff. And there was a book there by Michael Davies called Liturgical Time Bombs of the Second Vatican Council. And I didn't know Hannibal Bugnini was this satanic Freemason. I wouldn't be associated with any of them, not even a former one. You're not, are you?
That's funny.
But anyway, so Hannibal Bugnini, I'm learning that he changed the mass even before the Novus Ordo. He made these implemented these changes under Pius XII at the 55 liturgy. People were upset with that. Not at the time, oddly enough. No one really raised much objection.
Yeah.
It wasn't until, or even 62. There were changes in 62.
We're talking about things like the laity praying the Our Father and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, stuff like that. And just removing prayers in 55. He removed some of the Ash Wednesday blessings. Yeah. He removed some. Easter Vigil to the night instead of the morning. And so I'm reading about all this and the priest turning around and facing the people, which I'm like, well, I really wish he would turn around and face God like the rest of us. But,
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for the church to decide. I don't need to worry myself about that kind of thing. but at the time, I'm like, oh, can you believe these people? Davies started talking about like Marcel Lefebvre. He's this saintly archbishop who was treated so poorly by the Vatican and stuff. Wrongly excommunicated. It was illegal the way they did it because he believed there was this state of emergency in the church. And just because he believed it, that meant to him there was a state of emergency, so it justified any disobedience he had to the Pope. And I went along with this dumb stuff. I started to read all these Davies books and I could write a book myself, sorry. But reading all these Davies books, like Pope Paul's New Mass, Pope John's Council, Cranmer's Godly Order, and and you know, some of the Lefebvre books, like they have uncrowned him. You know, so yeah, and I also had these friends at Ohio State called the Catholic Student Society. So I was basically a part of that, even though I was not a student. I was actually kind of late to college. I was attending school at Ohio Christian University. It's Providence.
Okay.
But they let me in because I was a student when I'm older. And I knew some friends there, including Matt Weaver, who would become a Canon Weaver of the Institute of Christ.
Okay.
We read a lot of Davies books. We had that in common. We would hang out at night, talk about the SSPX, and just we thought they were just so cool, and we read all their material, and neither one of us had the guts to actually go to one of their masses, but we were, you know, we were really on their side. You know, we were seeing Lefebvre.
I mean, what was it though? What was it that, I mean, because you're reading all these books, you're hearing the grievances coming from that side, that, you know, that what's been taken away, how they've been wronged, you know, the all the grievances. Why would you say they appealed to you personally at that time?
Well, because I was a Protestant at one time, so I still had that in me. Still had that beast in me. Like my friend Ken said, you could take Matt out of Protestantism, but you can't take the Protestantism out of Matt. So.
That is crazy that you explained it that way. That's so simple.
Yeah, it's a natural trajectory. You know, a lot of trads are former Protestants. Like Bishop Williamson was an Anglican, I believe.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a lot of former Protestants who are trads, and it's that spirit.
Wow.
That, we're always protesting something. We've always, you know, we're basically the church of the fat blue-haired girls out there. Always got something. Always pissing on about something. So that's the trad.
Always got a grievance out here.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So,
you're not yet at the point where you're ready to hop in full bore yet.
Well, all I needed was a gentle push. It's a friend of mine named Jim Belisari. I'll never forget it. He came downstairs after Mass, Holy Family. This was 2010. And he said he knows a priest just ordained in the SSPX, Father Pizzuti. He's from Columbus. He's in town. Would I like to serve his Mass? We need a server. You're an MC here. Will you serve his Mass? And I'm like, heck yeah. Yeah, I'm in. You're going to love this. So his Mass is at his uncle's house, a guy named Doug Tuttle. Yeah, great guy. It was in his garage. July, 100,000 degrees. We're sweating. During the Mass, you know, Father Pizzuti pulls out Mr. Hankey, wipes his face. That's the first time I ever saw that done. I was like, you gotta be kidding me. What is this? And I was like,
yeah,
that's actually a damn good idea. I wish I would have brought one. Sweat on top here.
Like, oh my gosh, like,
that's not sanitary, man. You need to think of something else. But because he's wiping his nose and everything with it. And but yeah, I remember, you know, he was so nice. He was nothing like I thought he was going to be. There were some blunders I made, according to him. It wasn't quite the way the society would carry on as servers. And he very gently, politely guided me in the right direction. There was never a mean word. Great guy. I mean, he's still my friend. I have no bad word to say about him personally. You know, his beliefs, that's another story. But personally, just, great guy. Great guy. But yeah, that was my first exposure to the SSPX. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, I was anxious. So I ended up, I went to confession. And I asked the priest, it was trad, But he was, you know, he was in the diocese, and he was basically like, you can go to their communion, you can receive communion, you can go to the mass, just don't go to their confessions because they don't have factories. I'm like, okay.
Oh, okay. Okay.
My anxieties a little bit. And he's like, the Cardinal Pell letter, even though that was only directed to one particular group, said, yeah, the Cardinal Pell letter says that you can go and fulfill your Sunday obligation. So don't worry about it. Just don't go to confessions. So that's what I started to do. I was basically Father Pizzuti's personal sacristan in that garage, that sweaty, smelly garage. And I never did get a hanky, even though I wanted one.
Wow.
Yeah. So I started to cozy up the Father Pizzuti. He introduces me to the people in Northern Kentucky. Walton,
okay.
Northern Kentucky, south of Cincinnati, Walton, Kentucky, and he and I started to, he was at home for a long time, waiting for his assignment, so like 3 months or something, it was a long time,
yeah,
and he and I would go to Walton, Kentucky together, and I started to meet other Pius X faithful, and he asked me if I had a vocation. I said, well, I think I might, you know. First I inquired at the Fraternity of St. Peter. The rector there, he knew better. He's like, you know, you're still a new convert. All you guys want to be priests. It never worked out, man. Just give it some time, dude. You're old. Come on, man.
This guy was a little bit jaded, wasn't he? He's like, he's been through this before. You converts.
I can't stand you people. Just come in and just swoop in and take over. You know, kind of like that feel. I visit Winona, Minnesota, the seminary SSPX had there, Thomas Aquinas, and I was accepted. I stayed a week. I submitted an application. I was accepted in the seminary, but I had a lot of debt, student loan debt, and they wouldn't let me enter because of it.
Yeah.
I was a little upset about that, but
hey, offer, I remember when I was discerning becoming a Dominican, and I remember them talking about they had people who could help me settle some of my debt. Did they even offer something like that?
Here's the funny thing. Yeah, I almost forgot this. Thank you for bringing it up. My friend, Canon Weaver, his father was well off. He did well for himself, and he offered to pay off my debt.
Oh, okay.
Pay it all off. And I told them, like, hey, I've got a guy. Said he'll benefactor, he's going to help me along. And they said no, because then if you really don't have a vocation, you will feel that you owe it to him to complete formation. You were obligated. I was like, well, no, I would have to pay him back if I didn't follow through. And they still didn't, like, no dice.
That's interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Mm. So, yeah. So I was a little upset about that. And I remember, you know, when I would, Father Pizzuti, by the way, he was assigned to Lithuania. So he's gone for a long time. And I was attending mass in Northern Kentucky, 2 hours away from Columbus by myself. And every time I'd drive away, I'm like, man, you live right 15 minutes away from a lab. What are you doing? Why are you doing this? And I would say, well, because this is a compromised liturgy. It's indulgent. You have to admit the Novus Ordo is good. And you can't go to it. So you'll be contaminated. You'll catch Vatican II. You'll catch Vatican II with them.
So, I mean, because that's worse than COVID. I mean, it's an airborne virus. I mean, you wear a mask. It's crazy.
You can contract modernism just by hanging out with some yo-yo at the Novus Ordo.
True story.
Oh my gosh. So, you know, and I'm telling, I have these friends, I have my friend Joe. He's like, kind of down to earth. He says, Matt, you got Irish rage in you. Why don't you just rage quit this whole traditionalist thing? I'm like, hell yeah, I'm going to rage quit this stuff. So I rage quit the whole thing for a little bit. I'm still going to mass. I'm still going to mass. But I'm not taking it seriously. I meet my wife, you know, and we didn't do it right. We had our children before we were married. Okay. This was like 2013. I meet her. We had my son 2014.
Yeah. Where'd you meet this one at? Target? Where'd this one come from?
You know, this model, she's this one I think was at a warehouse on Olin Tangent called Woody's. No, it was okay. Woody's, you know, the place there. And we worked together.
Yeah.
So I knew her.
Okay, cool.
And yeah, that's where we met. And yeah, we had two kids pretty quickly, 2014, 16. We're cohabiting. Yeah. All this stuff, and
her background was
Baptist. Baptist from Akron, and she's actually working with Canon Sylvie to become Catholic now. I'll get to that, but she was Baptist. Her mother's a deaconess in the church there in Akron, and so yeah, we had our two kids, and so we've had them both baptized. I've drug my feet on that for like 2 years for my son. 16, I have my have them both baptized at St. Pius X Church in Reynoldsburg. And so I remember sitting there when they were baptized, and this dude was up there jamming on this acoustic guitar, and he's like, "Come on,
St. Pius X, right?"
Yes.
Yeah. So you know, the last time I went to that church, Matthew, and William, the last time I went to that church, I went to confession.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in confession at St. Pius X, and because I lived in Blacklick. And so it was I can walk there, right?
Yeah.
So in this confession, you know, I confess this sin, and what was this? Yeah, so it was masturbation. So I confess that.
Yeah.
And the priest says,
what'd he say?
And the priest, he says, "Oh, that's it. Oh, that's fine." And I walk out of there, and I'm like, "He said that was fine. That was nothing." It's like, okay, I won't be back there. And that's how I ended up as Saint Matthew the Apostle, but.
Same.
Yeah, so we say, yeah, you're sitting there, guys jamming out the to guitars. That's like, oh yeah, that sounds like Pius X. Yeah.
Well, and he was engaging the audience too, like the congregation rather. It's an audience at this point. He's like, everybody now, you know, my just busts out laughing, and I'm like, man, never again. And I really am not taking any of this seriously. I started to go to St. John Chrysostom. Cleveland Avenue, the Byzantine church, you know. And it wasn't until my dad called, and he had prostate cancer. You know, it was pretty aggressive. He didn't have long. So he's by this time living in Missouri. He had remarried. And that's when I started to take it seriously again. But only I was traveling to Missouri to visit him, Clinton, Missouri, about an hour from Casey. And I'm listening, you know, all the way down. I'm on YouTube listening to Father William Jenkins, who I met as a trad. I veered off into the Sede Vacantist camp for a minute.
Wow.
Immaculate Conception. I met Father Jenkins. Actually, that was something I glossed over. Sorry about that. I was there for some months, and he actually convinced me that I needed to be conditionally baptized because the certificate, it was a woman who baptized me, even though it said in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, and it said Catholic on my certificate. He's like, no, it was a Protestant woman who did it. And, you know, the church before the changes of Vatican II would have made you, you know, redo it, basically, like having a conditional baptism. So
Wow.
Yeah, so that's what I rage quit from. Sorry, I glossed over that, but that was a blur.
Yeah, that's pretty extreme. That can make you feel like, man, so this whole time I wasn't actually Catholic? What was going on?
It wasn't just that. It was like they said that the new right priests, bishops since 1968, there hasn't been a valid bishop or valid priest. So I was chasing sacraments, man. I was like, I met a priest here who was ordained in 62 at St. Andrew, Father DeVille, and I would go to confession to him, but and to the Byzantine priest, but to no one else because I didn't think anyone else had valid orders. Because convinced me, Father Chicata, who used to have a chapel in Columbus, his works convinced me that these were not validly ordained priests or consecrated bishops.
And I mean, how does that feel being like, because all around you are Catholic churches.
Yeah.
But you're like, yeah. How's that like, what type of spiritual life is that? I mean, what is that?
It's nerve-wracking because you're constantly chasing sacraments and you're back to Protestantism. You are. You're listening to a preacher you like, so I like Father Jenkins. So I'm going on his authority now. Forget the authority of the church. Yeah, he says the church defected somehow, even though Jesus said they wouldn't. And he had convinced me that all the there were no valid orders. And I was telling him, I go to this Byzantine priest for confession and sometimes to their liturgy. Is that all right? He's like, well, as long as they're traditionally minded. And I was like, how the hell do I know that? Yeah. I got to talk to him. I got to talk to every priest, say, hey, are you a trad? Yeah. All right. Yeah. It's like, it's not how that works. He'll just walk in and go mass. Hey man, you trad? Yeah. It doesn't work that way. So
wow.
It'll drive you crazy. And it carried on when my dad calls. So I'm visiting him. I'm taking the faith seriously again, and I'm back to listening to Jenkins. And he was one of the original nine. He was ordained by Lefebvre and was expelled by the society for being, sedevi contis.
Okay.
And so I had my dad, I told him, like, Dad, look, this is it. You know that this is a true church, because he never pushed back on me when I converted. He's like, I know you're doing the right thing, but he didn't want to go through with conversion. It's like, Dad, really, it's now or never. He's like, yeah, no, call a priest. I need to make everything right. And so I call Father Golddaddy, SSPX and KC. He comes to Clinton, received my dad into the church, and that just turned everything around for me again. But then I'm back to chasing sacraments. There's even a chapel close by run by a priest associated with CMRI, these SEDEs. But I'm told they have doubtful orders because they're took line priests. It's like, for shit's sake, guys, what can I do? Where can I? I can only come here. Catholicism's only in Cincinnati at Immaculate Conception Church. I mean, come on. And then my friend, Kevin Aschenbach, he was in the same position. And he told me, it's like, it's not in the character of our Lord to pull the rug out from under us. He's not a prankster. He's not like Beavis and Butthead running the church. Hey, Beavis, this dumbass thinks that's the church. That's not who's running the church. It's not Beavis. He's not going to just pull the rug out from under us. At what point did the Holy Ghost decide to up and leave his church?
Right, exactly.
And these arguments are sticking with me. It took some time. Even my wife's like, how is this different from what I'm doing? Why would I become a Catholic? If you just get to decide when the church is correct. So you're the one who interprets Vatican II. You get to interpret.
That right there had hit pretty hard.
It did. And I was pissed. I'm like, yeah, you don't know anything. Yeah. No comeback. No comeback. Just seethe. Like, oh. But yeah, this is sticking with me. And then the incident happens. My wife meets Jenkins, loves him, and she wants to be received into the church. We were staying in Akron during the lockdowns. We went to one of his chapels in Parma. She meets with him, loves it. These ladies, super nice to her. You know, they surround, like, tell her how beautiful she is and all this. And she's like, I love these people.
Mm-hmm.
Then later that year, we visit Immaculate Conception, Cincinnati. And this girl, I mean, knocked my house of cards down, because this girl came out, this chubby girl, jealous. My wife is getting these compliments because of her dress. She comes out and tells us that there's a dress code after Mass. She's like, hey, guys, welcome to the parish. There's a dress code. And I'm thinking, oh, did I not? Is this? Yeah, I'm looking at my son. He doesn't have a tie. I'm like, oh, shoot. Sorry. Next time we'll be in a tie. And it become apparent as she's talking to us, and she's talking about my wife's dress. I guess if the light reflects off the stars correctly, you can vaguely see through part of it somehow. I don't know what her deal was, other than chubby, jealous girl, but sorry, I'm calling it like,
I mean, did you encounter like a lot of like over like radical scrupulosity in these communities as well? Yeah. Is that a thing?
Yeah. That's a thing. Yeah. Okay. Still to this day, very scrupulous. You know, I have to check myself quite often. It's a thing. Scrupulosity is a thing in traditional circles. Like, and just the thought of a thought. I thought about having a thought. Yeah, you can drive yourself crazy. Young lady, obviously, had the same scruples and felt it necessary. She needed to tell us to respect the Blessed Sacrament. And it's like, are you serious? She has a dress. She looks better than you. What are you on about? You look like trash. Sorry, I mean, that's very uncharitable of me. But I'm just saying, in fact, this is like mean girl stuff here. It's like Regina George walked out and dressed us down. And it was in such a way we had no idea what the meant. We were just dumbfounded. And that led to me. She's like, we're never again. This ends now. And you're right. That was what blew my house of cards down. I contact Canon Sylvie in Columbus, Institute of Christ the King. And he set me straight on like ordinations. You know, he brought up some things I'd forgotten. Like Davies mentioned, you know, it can look ambiguous, the rite of consecration of bishops, but it's not. The framework's there. All you got to do is look at the rite as a whole. It's evident. They're consecrating a bishop. They're not calling upon some governing spirit. They're like, what's this governing spirit? Okay. Hell know what the governing spirit is. It's the Holy Spirit. You know that. But they just nitpicking it. Like you said, like a ex-girlfriend going through your phone. She's going to find something.
Yeah.
You know? It's so true. We're going to find something. And they have no one to answer to. They interpret things for themselves. He set me straight. And it took a while. My mom actually saw Taylor Marshall on Fox and wanted to tag along with me to Mass. This was like 2023. And it led to her straightening herself out with the church. And she goes regularly, you know. So that was really cool.
That's cool. So Taylor Marshall brought your mom back to the church.
Sure did. Sure did. But it was out of a spirit of rebellion. It's that Americanist, you know, we're special over here. We don't follow any Pope, you know. And then later, you know, I'm a big fan of the great one, you know, E. Michael Jones, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Some of his arguments would stick with me. Like, you know, the church is like the boat Christ is asleep on. And the waves are tossing it about. But the apostles didn't jump off the boat. They waited till Christ woke up to still the waters. Yeah. So you're going to die if you jump off the boat. Don't do it. Right. Also, trads are big into apparitions. He's like, it's the church's job to judge apparitions. You don't get to judge Fatima. There is no secret of Fatima.
What is that? Like the always focusing on apparitions and the prophecies and what is that piece? What are they?
The itching ears. You know, it's like it's just telling me it's making sense. The Bayside, I think, said that Paul the Sixth or John Paul II was an imposter. You know, others say, hey, Cardinal Siri was the actually validly elected pope, and they threatened him, and he, you know, decided not to be, he stepped down or whatever, and it wasn't legal, so he was still, it was all these apparitions would say these crazy things, Garandemba, or whatever, however you pronounce it, where St. Michael came and told her how great her teeth looked, or it was weird. It's confirmation bias, I guess. You know, Fatima, the fourth secret, the Pope is killed, and really what that means is the Pope has lost the faith, and all the church has lost the faith too. And you know, so it's basically confirming what your erroneous beliefs, like the some things she never said. In the La Salette, Rome will lose the faith. But Rome said that was not a valid part of the apparition. Rome in the 1800s said that.
Okay, I understand that now. I mean, you're bringing like so many things together for me, like the Protestant piece, the scrupulosity, because I knew it was always like those communities really cliquish, kind of culty at times. But then to talk about how the reliance on the apparitions and the prophecies, really that's just like they're supporting documentation to like justify them in what they already have disbelieved or believed, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it seems like, I mean, you're almost like a miracle, though. I mean, if you don't get married and have this wife who like you have these experiences, and this is, it's a lot of people, and I can, is, you know, because I say this about Freemasonry, right? It's kind of hard. It's very difficult for men to leave Freemasonry because one, community, right? You build these friendships, these relationships, people you trust. And so you have that family piece. That's hard. That's hard to leave.
Yeah.
And then you have like a whole set of truth, like these things you just believe that other people don't believe.
Right.
And so you're justified in your beliefs. William, that's hard. That's hard to get out of. I mean, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. No, it is. The traditional circles, although it's kind of like, trad recovery, right?
Yeah.
I like Laura. I think she's cool. The Miss Happy Catholic. I had a friend.
Yeah, she's been on here before. I forget all about that ministry.
I think she's cool, man. It's a different type of people who are anxious about that group. They're afraid to leave that community because they've been so manipulated. Me, I got into it older, and it's like, you know, as a man, when you walk into a room and there's like 30 people in there and you're looking around going, I could take every one of these, you know what I mean? I'm not afraid of these guys. There's still, there's nothing against them. I still have good friends who are trads. One guy, Nate, I talk to all the time. He's one of my favorite people to talk to. But I'm not afraid of them. It's like I said, they're like nerds who don't play Dungeons and Dragons. They obsess over
55 clergy. I think you said that in a comment. You said that in the comments before. I laughed, but I was like, man, he's like so right. These are the Dungeon and Dragon kids.
There was one guy who had like a neck tattoo and an AC/DC shirt on at one of these conferences. I'm like, well, I can't take that dude, but everyone else in here. Everyone That's else hilarious. Here is a big World of Warcraft guild, but
So what was it like coming? Because what did you consider? I mean, because it wasn't like a. How would you consider? Was like that a reversion or coming home or?
Yeah.
I mean, because that's a lot, man. I'm like so proud of you because, man, you're talking about pride. You had to check a lot of things, man. A lot of things.
Yeah. Absolutely. So what led to it was little comments people made that would piss me off at the time, and but stuck with me. So never think, anyone out there, that people are hopeless. I mean, look at me, but as hopeless as they come, and God found a way to reel me back in. Things you say stick with people. They do. And so basically what brought me in was these little things like Michael Jones and then John Salza. I once saw him speak at the Catholic Family News Conference in Cleveland. And at the time, he's an SSPX guy, former Mason, you know, and I thought he was just the coolest, you know. And then I see years later, he left the trad movement. He's talking about the sins and the errors of Lefebvre. What gives? So I tuned in, it's about 2 years ago, and I was like, what's he saying? And everything, the scales fell from my eyes. He brought up the mission of the church. And it's something, I think I sent you a comment. Andrew Mione wrote this book called Altar Against Altar. And I spoke with him about this. His chapter in that book on mission, your mission as a priest, as any holy order, it has to come from the top. It has to come from Jesus. Then you got the Pope, you know, the bishops, and on down. You can't just get a wild hair up your butt like Protestants and just think, yeah, I'm a Protestant, or I'm a priest now, you know, and get yourself ordained. If you're claiming this mission is from God himself, it's some special mission, you have to support that with miracles. You can't just say, hey, I'm a priest, I paid some bishop to do this in his garage. You can't do that, you know?
Yeah.
So that was, I found that very compelling. and just like some of the things Salza brought up, like the Novus Ordo, it's these things were already there. You know, it's basically, it's still essentially the same mass as the Tridentine mass. It looks a lot different. And I will say it's not as reverent. It's all there. It's all there. And so, it's like the scales fell from my eyes. And that's when I discovered you. You had the great one on, and then I saw John Saul's. I'm like, man, this dude's cool. I'm going to start watching David O'Gray. Wearing these cool suits. You know, like, yeah. So, that's when I started to listen to you. And, the rest is rock and roll history. I'm at St. Matthew's, like you were. I live in Blacklick. It's funny, you.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's now it's exclusively Novus Ordo, only because St. Leo is the Institute of Christ the King Oratory, and it's like 30 minutes away. If it weren't for that, I would go.
Okay. So Holy Family doesn't have theirs anymore.
No, it's the Mercedarians took over, and they're good though. I mean, it's that church looks more reverent. It looks more trad than ever. It's a Novus Ordo Ad Orientem, and
that's good because it's such a big, massive church, and it's. You could tell back in the '60s, and you could just tell what that church used to be. So that's good to hear.
When I was going there, it was kind of whitewashed, I guess, but you've been there, but they've made some significant improvements of it.
If you're telling a, somebody that's stuck in sort of a contest movements or people who are doubting the church, doubting the Second Vatican Council, believing the grievances. What are some things, if you get your hands on someone, you heard somebody saying these things, what are some things that you would say to encourage them?
People in Sede Contestatism, or you mean people who know? I'm sorry, can you rephrase it?
Yeah, people with Sede Contestatis or people who are doubting the church and Vatican II or starting to believe the grievances and stuff like that.
What would I say to them? Well, you're having these doubts for a reason. Don't ignore these thoughts that are in the back of your head when you're doing something silly like traveling 2 hours for a mass when there's one right down the road from you or 20 minutes away, whatever the case may be. Don't ignore those thoughts that are seemingly in the back of your head. That could be God just trying to give you a nudge to let you know he's there and is trying to guide you in the right direction. And
because you're saying when you're making that drive, there's something in the back of your head that's saying, what am I doing?
It's like, what the heck are you doing?
Don't ignore that.
The whole way up to the exit I'm getting off to go to Walton, Kentucky. It's like, what are you doing? This, you know, you have holy name. There's walking distance from your house now. What are you doing?
I've never heard that before. Like that's real talk.
And people, and no matter how rooted people there are, grounded people seem to be in traditionalism, there are these doubts. I've talked to them. They can't deny it. Even Jenkins is sort of agnostic when it comes to like the Sedevacantist position. He's like, at the time it was Benedict. Benedict doesn't, I'm not saying Benedict's not the Pope, but I don't see how he could be, Matthew. It's like, well, so you don't know? I could very well be wrong. He could very well be Pope. But this is a Catholic position to take because Bellarmine says that if a Pope enters into heresy, he magically loses his office and it doesn't require the church to depose. It's like, that's silly. What if he's in his room? How do I know he's not in his room saying some heretical stuff? So silly. But yeah, even they have these doubts. Come on. Father Jenkins, and he'll probably disagree with me about this, but to me, that sounds like doubt. I'm not the smartest dude around, but damn, if that doesn't sound like doubt to me, shoot.
So, that's definitely a duck.
And anyone who knows anybody who's in the trad circle, don't give up on them. I mean, don't be obnoxious, but you know, keep praying, keep insisting, you tell them the truth, tell them why they are incorrect. It sticks with you. I'll just say that.
That was good stuff, man. Thank you, William Matthew Priest, for coming on David L. Gray in the morning, man. I kept you here for a long time, man. That was a great story. It was a powerful story, and somebody definitely needed to hear this, man. They're gonna keep hearing it. So, thank you for that.
Hey, yeah. I'm glad you invited me, man. I'm glad we managed to get through this without having one of those viral moments, you know, for all the wrong reasons. I don't want to become a meme hundreds of years after you and I are dead and gone.
I think there are going to be some like people are mad at you for saying that you didn't baptize your one of your kids until they were two. Because lady was just on the comments the other day, mad at JD Vance for waiting until his child was 6 years old. So somebody's going to be mad at you. I mean, guarantee that.
I'm the first one to tell you I was wrong there. So if you're mad at me all you want, I get it. You should be.
But you got the job done. I got it done. Calm down.
Exactly. that's what a lot of us need to do, including me.
All right. Make sure you guys hop over. William's Substack is in the comment box. It's also in the description. So make sure you guys hop over there, subscribe to his Substack, check out what he's doing. And I'll be back on the Monday. We're going to be talking about something William just talked about. We're going to be looking at something Mother Miriam said about the Pope losing his job because of heresy. So let's take a look at that. She's quoting Bellarmine, like William said. So we'll hop into that. But you guys have a blessed weekend. But until then, till next time, blessings and peace to you and to yours. David O'Gray in the morning. William out.
Hey, yo, wake up. Yeah. New day, new mercy, fresh light on the way.
Coffee in the cup, let the silence pray. Word for your walk, truth for your mind. We read the signs, but we don't lose time. Culture talk, scripture sharp. Faith with rhythm, intellect with heart. No panic, no noise, just wisdom and grace. Morning hits different when you start in this place. Wake up, yeah. Tap in right now, let the truth hit soft. Let it hit profound. Wake up, don't scroll past prayer. It's David L. Gray in the morning. Meet me there. Breathe deep, set your pace. Faith ain't heavy when it's put in place. Start with God, then face the day. That's the kind of morning that don't fade away.